Synonym and definition. Za'ar. Za'ar. That's interesting. Za'ar.
I believe you guys had that there was a diamond done.
Oh, there's a lot of them here. Alone. Boy, that last Greek sign that is a dude.
46.
He, of course, isn't expecting a rational human being to finish that. Even setting it down.
I mean, almost every one of those lessons are all second to yours. You've got to switch over. Badges. You picked the word.
No, Mike. Mr. Saber, are you there?
So, what do you do on my end for it when I sign up for grid? I turn around.
That's right, you'll be prepared for it. Do it if they had it yet.
I heard that they might be offering that next year.
Really?
I'm trying to convince them, but I'm glad to be there and take it.
I think the day they're getting from the idea of this. You know, the day they're talking about is this day when the third one says people have them. Yeah. Tony waylaid me in the grad room there, so. You're not in cahoots with these guys, are you? Yeah. Okay. Sure.
You realize, of course, we're standing out on a limb.
Well, yeah, but looks like all of them, they're just glossing it.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's talking about it admits it's strange. And I think that's the best sense. And of course, you got tradition and a lot of other things mixed in. But I think that picture of the third one leading from, you know, to use ago in that sense.
Like it's sticking, like it's playing, leading away from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still maybe some debate as to whether, you know, what portion of the day and so forth, but it's those. That's a problem. That's a semantic problem that comes in all the time, the difference between ordinal and cardinal numbers and how you count days and whether you count the first day and not and so forth. I mean, that's not just a problem with the scripture, it's a problem with people in general. Okay, lesson 42, we're talking about the Pu'al. So we'll continue on that. Page 207 is what we got to. We looked at some of the forms and so forth, and then we're looking at a little bit of peculiarities and meaning. The top of the page, he says, the passive represented by the Pu'al has no expressed agent. And because this corresponds semantically to an active verb with an indefinite subject, somebody, someone, they, and so forth, it may be followed ungrammatically by an object with et. So whether we like it or not, it'll appear that way in Hebrew, and technically it would be violating rules because you wouldn't have a passive form with a direct object. But what he's saying is they've done this on occasion, and in so doing, they have almost supplied an active idea to the verb, even though it is a Pu'al form. And so it's kind of a hybrid construction. And so the translation, we've got Sugar lo eth hadavar, one recounted the matter to him. And technically, the matter was recounted. You wouldn't even say the matter was recounted because that's the direct object, but you might say almost it's got the idea of something was recounted to him, the matter, you know. And then they go on to describe what it was. So maybe I could say it was recounted to him, the matter. Maybe do it that way. I don't know. But so be it. That's what you'll see, and you'll probably end up with a translation of an active way. Almost it's almost impossible to avoid that in English. Then a second construction peculiar to passive verbs is that in which a preposition is omitted before a specifying noun. So we've got kus'u heharim tse'el. Okay, the mountains were covered with a shadow. Now notice the with a shadow, all you have is the mountains were covered a shadow. That's literally all you have. You don't have a with there. You don't have a buh or something like that. And that's the thing he's trying to point out is being odd, that you just have a noun thrown on there. It's not a construct relationship because you can see harim is got this normal plural ending. We just got a noun tacked onto another noun, but it's there's no construct relationship here. There's nothing like that, and there's no preposition. And so he says this probably has its origin in the following mixture of constructions. So he's kind of recounting some of the other things we've seen and some of the other things that happened to try to justify this construction. So I don't really care that you know this whole sequence here. It's just a kind of an interesting sidelight as to how this might happen. The main thing is just recognizing that this construction occurs and no prepositions there. So this is his reasoning. One construction is a verb like male, in its intransitive sense, to be full, regularly has a specifying noun without a preposition. I think we ran into this before. So male hakeli mayim, the vessel is full of water. So literally the vessel is full of water. And you don't have the of water here, really. Hakali is just the vessel. It's the subject of the verb. And then you don't have an S or you don't have anything else marking. It's just mayim. And it's almost like it's a complementary idea to the idea of being full. It's a complementary noun telling you the sense in which it's full. It's water full, it's full of water. This is an old construction in Semitic and may be termed historically correct. In other words, apparently there's a lot of precedence for this kind of thing, and rather than seeing this as an exception, we may be saying this is the rule. Yes? John? Huh?
I was thinking, almost like a construct, the vessel of water, but it's not.
No, it isn't.
No.
Yeah.
Article.
Right. Yes, that's what breaks that up. Kali is the same form construct or absolute, so that, as far as its form, it would work, but there's no article on a construct form. And there would be.
Both cases have the impact of a construct, essentially. Because you could say the mountains were covered of a shadow, and that would,
Giving that genitive sense, yeah, it does. It does have a similar type of sense, but its construction is quite different. Okay, then B, corresponding transitive usage of male employs the same construction. Male eth hakeli mayim. He filled the vessel with water. So they can even use it in the transitive sense for fill, to fill something, and use mayim without a preposition here. Okay, then C, the PL verb mil-a being a transitive form only is used in two ways. First, as a normal verb without reference to the above. So mil-a eth hakeli b'mayim, he filled the vessel with water. So you'll see it that way with just the preposition base. Or as the equivalent of male. Mil a eth hakali mayim. So that you'll see both ways with this transitive form of the verb, and you'll see examples of both. So then D, the pu'al verb mul'a may be regarded as a transformation of either of the two constructions given in C. Mul'a hakali b'mayim, the vessel was filled with water, or mul'a hakali mayim, the vessel was filled with water. And so that latter one is what you started with up here. It's analogous to the mountains were covered with a shadow. So he's gone through all of that to come back up to that first point. In other words, he's trying to give you justification. The Hebrew does some funny things. There are other constructions that don't use a preposition on an important noun like this, and this is one of those. In other words, he's trying to draw a parallel between this kind of thing and what we've seen before. So you may see it both ways, in other words, in the text. A pu'al form, for example, here being used, and either a preposition on the noun or in some cases no preposition on the noun. And the way there's no preposition is usually because there's pretty good understanding of the meaning of it anyway. I don't think they're going to just up and out and eliminate the preposition for no reason, but because it's an idiom, because it's commonly said, because it's a common expression, you fill vessels with water, at least in their time, and it's quite understandable, so that it may just be a result of streamlining and cutting out something that was not needed. Hebrew does have a tendency to do that. Okay, now section 155 is dealing with something different now. This is a completely different grammatical point. This is somewhat on the heels of our talk about pause in the previous chapter. He's talking about another feature of accent change and shift, and sometimes involving vowel point change. There are several orthographic features of the Masoretic text which, because of their frequency, must be pointed out, noted at this point. So we're dealing with proclusis, retraction of stress, and conjunctive dagish, and all kind of interesting. Proclusis is the first section here. As was mentioned in our discussion of pause, section 152, certain types of words stand in a syntactically conjunctive relationship. Any word in this category may be made proclitic to the one that follows if the accentual pattern of the verse so demands. Proclusis is marked with a makef and is more or less the rule for the monosyllabic prepositions and particles. El, al, av, im, min, im, pen, and all the negative, though instances may be cited where these words are accentually distinct. Examples of other types of words in proclusis are. So we've already encountered this thing, we just didn't know what it was. And proclusis means basically that the word is losing its accent to the word following. In other words, it's kind of pointing toward the word following. And this happens not only in those places where that we've already been used to seeing, but here's Lo Yasur, he will not depart, got a makef there. Asher Nathan Li, notice there's a makef in all three of those, between all three of those words. Kind of tying them all together. Asher Nathan Li, see, which he gave to me. And this would occur in a sentence where the accentual rules required it. You know how it is when you sing a song, and sometimes to try to fit a lot of words into one phrase and make it rhyme and so forth, you kind of run them together real quick. And then other times you'll spread them out, you know, and hit a different note on every syllable. And other times you'll try to hit several syllables on one note. That's the kind of thing that's causing this problem. Is in their meter and rhythm and so forth. They may be able to. They may want to squeeze this all in as one accentual unit. Put the stress on one, so they're running things together. Ki yashith, that he was placing. So for the other examples, I don't need to read through them all, but that's the idea. Now, the only important vowel changes before makef are a tseri going down to segol. That's one that you'll often see. So if you see a segol on something you're used to seeing a tseri on, consider this as a possibility. And then a cholam going down to kamas katuf. That's another shortening. And we've already seen that a little bit with some of these imperative forms and so forth, with shamor na and so forth. When you put a na on the end of things, that'll often happen and shorten it up. So here's some examples. Yitin li, you normally expected yitin, but the tseri shortens down to segol. And shemor na, as I mentioned, observe now. So there's one feature that we have to watch for. And the main thing here is when you're reading in the text and you see something that doesn't square up with what you've learned, and it looks pretty close, but something short about it or something, that's one of the things to consider, the pause relationship here. And not so much pause in this case, but proclusis, which is mitigated by the necessity for certain types of meter and so forth in the accent pattern. Okay, then the second situation here is retraction of stress. Retraction of stress. Okay, so nesaga or nasag akor, I guess is the Hebrew technical term for it. But it says there is a tendency, by no means consistently applied, to avoid two stressed syllables in succession. So, you see, normally that won't happen because if you stress, the Hebrew normally stresses the last syllable all the time. So if they're normally stressing the last syllable all the time, as long as you've got words that are more than one syllable, you know, you won't get two syllables adjacent to each other that both have the stress. But if you get two words that, you know, or a monosyllabic word following a, you know, so forth, then you might get two syllables that have the stress. Or especially in situations like this where you have some words that are stressed in the first syllable. And penultimate stress, or second to last, in other words, lechem, for example. And so if you had a situation where you've got tokal lechem, tokal, the stress would be in the last, and lechem, the stress is on the first. So what you've got is two stress syllables in succession. So what they'll say is that, and this will not always be applied, but one may either find a proclusis where the first word loses its stress entirely, and so it's just tokal lechem, and you get a makef there, and the tokal just kind of lost its stress and it's flowing right over into the lechem, in which the stress of the first word is surrendered completely. or a retraction of the stress in which the stress of the first word is moved back into the second full vowel. Not the schwa now, but the second full vowel. So you could get tokal lechen. And so the stress of the first is pushed back so it wouldn't be next to the stress of lechen. And so tokal lechen. And this may be the thing you're seeing with, you see, why yihu sham. Notice that the stress has come Wayihu rather than Wayihu as you expected. And same things happen there. This may be part of the reason why we run into that problem, remember, with while consecutive and Wayomer and so forth. There may have been a similar pattern as a result of that, just because of, you know, stressed word following or something that caused the whole thing to start shifting that direction. They seem to be related, but not for the same cause and effect relationship. Then part C, conjunctive dagesh. Okay, or dagesh. When a word ending in an unstressed kamatz or kamatz hay, in other words, the hay is in parentheses, or eh, segol hay, is followed by one beginning with a stressed syllable, a dagesh may be placed in the first consonant of the second word. So, hayitha lanu, for example. What we have here is the tha at the end that's got a kamatz at the end and it's unstressed. And if the following word begins with a stressed syllable, and I'm not sure what the logic behind this is, but if the following word begins with a stressed syllable, then you're likely to see a conjunctive dagesh there. And you'll put a dagesh in the first letter of that word. So notice the lanu, the lamad, has the dagesh. The absence of the stress on the final kamatz hay or segol hay of the first word may be, one, normal as in the preceding example, two, due to retraction, as in ye aselo, it was done for him. There's a retraction that's taken place, because normally it would be ye ase, but the retraction's taken place for other rules, because of, you know, things like above. And again, getting two accented syllables in a row. So they retracted that, and having retracted that, now we're in the situation where you have an unaccented segol hay at the end, and that's resulting in the conjunctive dagesh. The lama's got the dagesh in it. And then due to proclesis, same thing can happen the other direction. If the word is pulling the stress from the previous word, and the stress was normally on the last syllable, then you might end up with a situation with a comma, say, unstressed. It was stressed normally, but now it becomes unstressed, and the stress has gone to lanu here. And that will also result in a dagesh, because the same situation you've got there. Comma, say, now with no stress. So, hava, lanu. And getting the conjunctive dagesh in the lamad again. The phonetic value of this dagesh is not certain. So, what the sound is intended to convey, and so with a double a letter like that, if it's not certain, we're just not making any difference in it. Yes?
That from how the word comes.
See, it says give to us.
Some kind of a form for us.
Yeah, I have to check that. I probably want to look that one up. What it looks like is they've got the comma's hey there. It looks like a shortened imperative form with a comma's hey ending for second person masculine and singular. So if that's the right translation, give to us. Remember, we had some that got a comma's hey as a longer form, and then they shortened the front part of it to do that. And so this is probably shortened from something. Now, I don't know what verb it even try to look it up under. Maybe hoov or something like that, or hav. Might be a hollow, it might be a one yod.
Yeah.
Is there a yahav?
Yahav, yeah.
And what does it mean? Okay. One yod would be another possibility, so that's what he's checking. Kind of a nasty one. Okay, that's what it is then. Got it on the second guess. That's pretty good. Usually you go more than that. Okay. So it's from Yahav, and it's this would be an imperative.
Imperative is Hav. Yeah.
Yeah. So Hav would be your imperative, and then Hava would be that imperative with the comma C ending. Remember that longer form?
Yeah.
They call it paragogic A?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I assume that's what parag means.
Yeah, paragogic. Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's what you call something you don't know what else to call. It's just there. Okay. Good.
I just realized that what Hava and Gila means, give us the joy.
Oh. Yeah.
Gila is from joy.
Uh-huh.
So.
Huh. I never thought about that before. Okay. I learn something every day. Hopefully. All right. But that kind of gives you a lesson in trying to see forms. Or now, if we'd seen that Hava, it's only the hint that he said give to us, that because he gave us the translation, that eliminated a number of possibilities. So we were looking at maybe a hollow or a one yod with an imperative. But if we were not given the translation here and just saw this form Hava with two commas there and so forth, you'd have a lot more options to look up. Okay. All right, so be it for this lesson. The vocabulary, quick look at this. We've got za'ak, which is a synonym of za'ak. Same thing, except one's got a zion, one's got a tzadi. They call it a synonym, at least, in both meaning to cry out. And they say doublet, because sometimes in poetic meter and so forth, they'll put two words that rhyme together, and especially if they've got similar meaning. And they'll do that on purpose, just for, you know, rhyme and that type of thing. So that's why they've referred to it as doublet. You'll see this a lot more when we look at Psalms and so forth. We've got sar, the imperfect, yasur, hollow verb, to turn aside from a given course, to depart, to go away, all of them intransitive. And here's one that you have to watch for, because this is an example of how, what a great difference the jots and tittles can make. Look at this, hillel. We had Hillel before. Remember what Hillel meant?
Mm-hmm.
Praise. Look what this one means. To defile, pollute, or dishonor. So you would certainly not want to make a mistake between these two words. If you intended to say praise and say pollute or defile, you know. So it's interesting to speculate on this, too, is that the sound is almost the same. The Hillel and versus the Hillel is making this difference between the positive and negative. And I don't know if there's any significance to that or not. You know, it just sounds the same, but you just, you know, with a ch or h makes a difference. Okay. So be sure not to make a mistake on that. You want to say hallelujah with an A sound, not with a K sound, you see. Otherwise, you'd be blaspheming.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Kippur. You've heard of Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. So this is kippur, meaning to atone for, to make atonement. This is a verb form now. What kind of verb form would this be?
P-L.
Yeah, P-L form. Yeah, even though it's got the sagol instead of the teres you normally see. You got the doubling in the second radical and so forth. Okay.
So there is a kafar, though.
Yes, there is.
Yeah,
kafar meant to cover something that needs... Yeah.
To
this is derived...
Intensely cover them.
Right.
To make atonement.
To make it transitive, you know, to cover someone, atone, and yeah, it's got... It's almost spiritualizing it, too. It's almost taking it up a notch into another realm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, necham is to comfort or console, and instead compare the other nifal form, necham. This one's PL, and the other one was nifal. And they look, and they're exactly the same in the third person masculine singular, see? So yeah, they are different, though, in the rest of the paradigm. And once you go through the paradigm, they'll break down different. But it turns out, you see, this one being a PL, but being a two guttural, is taking the pathak. But the other one being a nifal, and that was the normal nifal pattern. Yeah, ah. So as it turned out, in the third person masculine singular anyway, they appear different.
So context can be on the key.
If you see, yeah, if you see a third person masculine singular form anyway.
And also.
Uh-huh. So your context is going to have to be your guide if it's 3MS. But if it's one of the other forms, you'll see enough difference. Now, I'm not saying all of the other. You have to look at the paradigm and compare them and see if some of the other forms, some of the ones with Shawa and so forth might come out looking the same too. I didn't take a look at that and compare it thoroughly. But okay, then we've got Simach, to gladden, cause to rejoice. So again, we've got a PL form, and it's almost got a causative idea, cause to rejoice, to gladden. And of course, we had Sims Cobb before, I think, joy. So this is what it's derived from, or one's derived from the other anywhere. At least they're related. Okay, nouns, Chothain, father-in-law, Le'ava, meaning flame, Na'al, meaning shoe or sandal, Kodesh, holiness, sacredness, as a noun now, and then we've got Awon, guilt, iniquity, punishment, and some other assorted ones. Madua is why or for what reason. It's an interrogative adverb. Madua, what for what reason. And then Halom is hither, a less frequent synonym of Hina. Okay, proper names, Moshe, Moses, Midian, Yithro for Jethro, and Horev for Mount Horeb. So those are all pretty common, and we just transliterate those. Yes?
The difference between the ark and the ark is the one with the solid used in earlier books.
Is it? Okay, so and then later on, the Zion form is used? Okay. Yeah, that may be just a... Is there any place where they're both used in one verse that you could see? Okay. That's the impression I got when he said doublet here. I was thinking more of sometimes they'll put two verbs that have the same sound except one with a slight difference in the same. So I thought that might be the case here, but apparently it's not. Oh, he didn't say there. Okay. What you'd have to do is check the concordance then. Boy, that would be kind of tough, though. You'd have to look at both of them up and see if there's any verse where they're both in common. No. That'd be interesting. I'd be curious to know that just to see if it's used in a poetic sense that way. Oh, he's going to check it. Oh, you got two of them. Okay. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. That's what I would expect anyway. And that may be the case, you see. It may be, indeed, that one's used in the earlier and one's used in the later, and Psalms is about in the middle, and they may have picked both of them. In other words, sometimes in English, in poetry, we pick up a word that was used in the older language because it rhymes better or because it fits in better. People still know what it means, but they're not using it very frequently, and they might stick it in there to get that kind of thing. So that wouldn't be an impossibility, but we'll see and find out if it actually happens. If it does, I'd expect it in Psalms or Proverbs or someplace. Maybe in the prophecies, too. In the prophecies, sometimes they get into this kind of thing, too. And the prophets, they do play on words a little bit, too, but usually there it's when the words mean something different and they sound the same. Okay. Now we come to a debatable crossroads here. Well, I'll make a formal assignment here of this. I think I mentioned it to you yesterday. Number one, part A, number one, number nine, number 17. And the reading of Moses in the burning bush. And we probably got half an hour left. We could get into the Hithiel in the next chapter, but we probably ought to at least go through this part A here anyway, even if you haven't got all of it worked out. And I hate to get into another verb category here, although this pool isn't very difficult. So let's do that. Did you find anything on that yet, John? No point. Any common places? Yeah. Okay.
Although I don't know about his statement that they found in earlier books, unless he's saying, and it's, you know, because both of them are found in.
is a liberal, but of course, now there's another thing, that if Yesenius is a liberal, he's dating those books different than we are, too.
That's true.
He's saying, well, aha, this is the Priestly Redactor. Yeah.
But they're in all the different books.
Yeah. But what? Yeah, he's putting all the books up. That's almost certainly the case. He's putting them all up, and he's saying that this is an older form, and therefore, you know, that part of the book was older. In other words, that's reflecting an older literary tradition. Yeah, JEPD. So that's interesting. You've got to watch out. You've got to watch out for Yesenius. Trigelli's usually catches him on a lot of things like that. He'll put a note down. If you ever look at the notes and brackets, you know, Yesenius will say something, and then Trigelli's down there, who's a evangelical scholar. He'll say nonsense, you know. This is in something of that nature. Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah, we'll let John continue on that there. Okay, go ahead with number one there, Gary.
Matura, Eli, Bertha, S. Macron, Kadeshi.
Okay.
Kadeshi.
Yeah, Kadeshi.
Why did you dishonor this place? Oh, why did you dishonor the place of holiness?
Yes, of my holiness, right. Why did you dishonor or defile the place of my holiness? Good. So there's that verb, chileo, in chilalta here is the second person masculine singular form. And then madua, the new vocab word you had, and eth makom, we've had makom before. And holiness we've been given here is kodesh, and this would be the form with the suffix kodeshi. Okay, so why did you defile the place of my holiness? All right, Peter, number 9.
Gadol Yahweh hu mechulal meod ba'ir Eloheinu har kadesho.
Okay, or kodesho. Yeah, that's a kamas katuf there, so. And be sure that Uma Hilal, Uma Hulal, it's a who, not who.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's what you meant. I was just calling attention to you. I couldn't tell for sure the way you said it, which was. Because it will make a vast difference. This is kind of a different, I don't think you've quite seen a construction like this before.
This is like working with just Mahulal. Like something was polluted.
Yeah, except this is from the positive form. Hillel.
Oh.
Praised. So, but you're right, it's a participle. It's a passive participle from the PL form. So, it's the Pu'al participle. So it was the same idea, passive.
And with the from on front of it, from?
Well, no, that muz is actually a prefix for the participle in these Pu'al forms and so forth. You look at I don't know if they give this verb or not. Well, if you look at Gudal there, Megudal, see, that's your pattern.
Okay.
So that name is just a part of a prefix for the participle.
Okay, how about great is Yahweh and praise, and he is praised?
Yeah, something like that. And
he was praised?
Yeah, it could be. Since if you say great is Yahweh, and great and being praised much or greatly praised, In other words, it's trying to make this a... There's two adjectives that are modifying Yahweh here. Yahweh is great and Yahweh is being praised.
Okay, now we're on the first
page. Okay, yes. Right. So great is Yahweh and greatly praised, something like that. And praised much. See, the ma'od is much praised. So great is Yahweh and much praised.
Here, in the city of our God,
mm-hmm.
the mountain of
his holiness. Yes, okay. So now what you... Yeah, right. So great is Yahweh and greatly praised or much praised in the city of our God in the mountain of his holiness. Okay, see some things you recognize here. Number six.
There was no inn, really, over the mountain.
No, that's because of the same thing. In effect, it's the same kind of thing. You could eliminate the inn. You could just say, in the city of our God, the mountain of his holiness. But they repeat the inn because it's kind of distributional. In other words, it's the inn is kind of covering the whole thing. Okay, number 17 then. Let's see, Doug? Because of? On the matter of Aldebar?
Because of my sorrow.
Yeah, my and then Gadol is modifying that. So my great iniquity or sorrow or whatever they give for that. Guilt, iniquity, punishment is what they give for Avon there. So because of my great iniquity or because of my great guilt. Okay, in order that, let's see, this wouldn't be I shall because it's a third person form. It shall be atoned for, yeah, something like that. It shall be covered, it shall be atoned for. So from Kippur. Good. So until now I fasted, or up till now I have fasted because of my great iniquity in order that it may be atoned for. Okay. So you can see what kind of a new dimension these passive forms are adding for us, and pu'al forms and so forth. In other words, he's trying to employ these to show you the senses that you can gain from that. That it may be atoned for, you see, rather than having to put everything in the active sense. Okay, questions on any of those? All right. The reading, I think we can go ahead and struggle through this a little bit. You seem to do it as fast this way as having prepared, you know, so.
I don't.
Oh, did you find anything?
I don't see anything that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any place where both words are used in the same verse?
As far as I can tell, no.
Okay.
I can do the Psalms 107 where each word is used twice. I don't know, just a couple of the, apparently the words here.
Okay.
Begin. Each time they begin the second phrase of what is probably a couplet in there.
Okay.
And
they're not
in
the same verse.
And then
okay, so they're going back and forth in the same psalm.
No, it doesn't go back and forth because you've got za'ak first, and
okay.
Then two
za'ak. Oh, I see.
And then za'ak.
Okay.
I don't know if it's anything like that. It doesn't appear to be, what do they call it?
Acrostic or something?
Acrostic.
Yeah. Well, that would tend to confirm the general idea, though, of a doublet. In other words, he's saying that the two different words are used in the same context with the same basic meaning. And probably for, it's not maybe not be acrostic, but it may be done for sound purposes and change of sound, just to get a little variety in sound so you're not seeming so repetitious.
And as for the lateness or earliness in the use, with a Sade, Jeremiah is about the latest, the last usages, so before the captivity, whereas in, with Zadok, it is used in Zechariah 1, so
mm-hmm.
that's, and in Habakkuk, and
that's not a whole lot to build that kind of distinction on.
That's not much to go on. And Ezekiel, it's used, it does appear that it has more uses in the later books. But I mean, that's quite a real general.
Sure. And to follow the premise of the Jesenius, you'd have to have that Psalm 107 composed of several different authors.
Oh, exactly.
Okay. So be it. I rest my case. Okay, let's go ahead with verse 23 then. I guess the price, let's take a crack at that.
Mitzrayim.
That's a silent Shua because of the Eric. Mitzrayim.
Y-A-N-A-H-U.
It's a good one. Y-A-N-A-H-U.
V-A-N-A-H-U.
Anahu.
Yisrael min habo
ha avoda. Ha-avoda.
Is that a comment or a footnote?
Oh, it's a comment. Yeah, mine does look a little... I see what you're saying. My print is a little bit bad, too. It looks like another cross at the bottom of it. I'm sure it's just a mistake. A leaky typeset or something.
Why is Aku?
Yes, why is Aku?
What all show Sam Elohim?
Okay, we had some interesting words there. All right.
And it was during those many days that the king of Egypt died, and the sons of Israel died from the slavery, and they cried out, and their cry went up to God from the servitude.
Okay, good. Yeah, and it came to pass, or see, you said enduring those many years, that's a possibility. It's got the idea of, and it was in those many days. It was in those many days, and I think some they take it a little looser and after those many days, but I kind of prefer more of a, and it came to pass in those many days, or during those many days, that'd be fine. But the king of Egypt died. And that the sons of Israel sighed from the slavery or servitude, bondage, whatever he had. And they cried out, and their cry went up to Elohim, to God, because of or from the slavery, literally from the slavery, the cry from the slavery, but the idea is cause and effect. So the cry came because of the slavery, servitude, or whatever. Okay. Good. 24, over to John there.
Vaishma Elohim et Na'akatam.
Yeah, Na'akatam. It's a lot of There's four A's in a row there. Na'akatam. Na'akatam. It's a good one.
Vaishkor Elohim et Berito et Abraham et Yitzchak.
Yitzchak. Yeah, Yitzchak. It's a good one to pronounce.
Yaakov. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Short and sweet.
And God heard
the
cry.
Yeah, their cry. Right, just a third person singular.
Is that
well, it's not an object. This is just a this is just a noun. It's just a noun with your normal possessive suffix on it.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. With normal suffix.
Yeah, just, you know, your the third person plural, masculine. Mm-hmm.
Their cry. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob.
Yes. Okay, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. Notice, too, that there's no W at the end of the second. You know, it's kind of almost like they're understanding a comma. F, Avraham, F, Yitzchak, W, F, Yaakov. So we mentioned that before, that they'll do that. Lots of times you'll see an and on every one of them, too. So you just kind of have to be prepared for that. But you almost have to make a pause when you see that. And then noting that F is with here rather than the object marker. Okay. Good. Questions, anyone? That Yitzchak is a real good one. That from tzachak, to laugh, the verb form. So it's a real. And I always wondered about the sound of tzachak. You know, tzachak for laughter. It's almost, you know, when you hear a person laugh, or, you know, tzachak, tzachak, tzachak. You know, it's a. I think it's at least slightly onomatopoeic. Yeah. Right. Maybe. We'll have to listen to a Hebrew laugh and see what. Okay. verse 25. Tony, you want to take a crack at that? It's short.
Sure. YRA, Elohim, S, today, Israel,
Wayeda?
Wayeda.
Yeah, you got to really look. There's two dots there, but they're hard to see.
Elohim.
Okay, looks like a Morse code there almost. Dash, dot, dot, dash. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
I've got, and God went forth toward Israel, and he knew God.
Okay, well, the went forth, this is to see, from to see. So, you know, God saw the sons of Israel, and he knew them. So God saw the sons of Israel, and he knew them. Yes, let's see. Now, let me check here. God saw sons of Israel, and God knew. Yes, the them, I put a parenthesis around, because it wasn't actually stated, and God knew. In other words, and God saw the sons of Israel, and God knew. And but the idea of to know in this kind of connotation usually involved knew them. So you can put the them in parentheses, or just leave it, and God saw the sons of Israel, and God knew.
In that sense,
I think so. He's in other words, the point is that he's expressing to us that he's fully cognizant of what's going on with them. So God is aware of them, you might say. In other words, he sees their suffering.
Understood my
feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. In other words, he wasn't totally in the dark about it.
He's aware.
Yeah. He's aware, and he's sympathetic, too. I mean, he's got a certain kind of a sense. That's coming mainly from the way the poetry flows, the way the tenor flows. That you see the same kind of thing. God remembered Noah, you know, when he was in the ark and that type of thing. It's that, like, he's watching what's going on, and he's not unaware of the circumstances. Okay.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
I know what I do wrong. Couldn't that word have also come from
to be afraid? Yes. That's one of the ones that's often confused with. Why Yar there?
There is.
Yeah. And, that's Yera or something like that for being afraid. But this is a three hey from Ra'ah, and the other one is Yara with a Yod, Resh, Aleph. And this is an apocopated form, too, which makes it hard, this Why Yar form. And they made a mention of it back in one of those chapters, you know, and set it apart, kind of said, you know, watch out for this. That's a very easy one to, that's one of the most common mistakes, is confusing those two verbs. And, see, the one Yod chapter has, Yare, And its form in the imperfect is yira, actually. And the imperfect would be yare. And then your three hey here for ra'a. Let's see if I can get a chapter on that.
And there's also yera too.
Oh, yes. Yera, okay.
Exact same letters that...
is it with an aleph too instead of a...
Right on there at the beginning of verse 2. The exact same letters.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right. He might have done that. He might have chosen those on purpose. I don't know. Yeah, to appear. And that's, see, that's from the same verb, yara. I mean, from ra'a, but it's a passive idea, I think. Or do they give a separate verb for that? It should be related to it.
To appear is nira'a.
Okay, nifal. Okay, nifal, it's a nifal form from the same root, ra'a. So nira'a, that would be the passive form, you see. To see is one thing, and then to appear is a nifal. Interesting. So, it's a good... now, if all you needed one is one with the verb to fear, and we really have them all three together. Okay, who's up next? Verse 1, Eric.
Moshe, Aya, Roe, Epson, Yitro, Motanu, Koten, Midian, Yin, Hav, Ep, Hasson, Achar, Hav, Mid, Hav, Mid, Midbar, Vayako, El, Har, Harevahem, Koreva.
Okay.
Moses was shepherding the small flock, small cattle. Jethro, his father-in-law, was priest in Midian. And he drove the small flock to the edge of the backside of the desert. And he came to the mountain of God, towards Horeb.
Okay. Towards Horeb, or Horeb word. Yeah, to Horeb. Okay, good. And Moses was tending the sheep or flock of Jethro, probably just flock of Jethro just because of the construct, although Tzon doesn't look any different in construct. But of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he drove the sheep or the flock or small cattle to the edge of the wilderness, or how did you word that?
Edge of the wilderness.
Yeah, edge of the wilderness. Yeah, coast. Yeah, I think they may have translated it that way too. You know, the outskirts, the outback, as the Australians would say, maybe to the edge of the wilderness, and came to the mountain of God, to Horeb. Okay, well, good note to end on here. We'll for tomorrow. I'll go ahead and prepare for the rest of that. Did the bell ring yet? Actually, I can't remember. I never hear those bells.
No,
I didn't. Okay. Well, by my watch, we've got a few seconds left. Yeah, it's real close. So maybe we'll spare somebody from getting started on the next one. But for tomorrow, finish out. Yeah, for tomorrow, we'll finish out. We'll remember Peter was next. And we'll continue verse 2 there. And then you might want to read ahead in lesson 43 a little bit. And let's see, tomorrow is Thursday. We're going to do review tomorrow, too. We'll do the review first, just to see if there's any questions and so forth for that grammar quiz. Make sure we get that out of the way first, and then we'll finish this up and then get into Gifiel. Okay, and I'm sure the bell's going to ring any second, so there's no... Go ahead and dismiss now. Give you a little grace. There it is.
Do you think you will be able to get through the book?
I think the rate we're going now, I don't think it'll be any problem. And if not, we'll make sure we do or something. I don't know. It is winding, you know, it's getting closer, but we're covering a lot more chapters per week. The only thing that's slowing us down is taking the tests. And well, we can make an adjustment on that. But see, the thing is, I'm not really worried about whether we make it before the semester or not, because of the fact that we're into real text. In other words, with our readings, we're taking text right out. You know, no different reading it here than it is out of the text, and then we're picking up fine points as we go. So, this is, as far as I'm concerned, no problem. But once we get out of the book, then you'll have to bring your text with you to class, because then we're going to start taking it right from the scripture. And that in Hebrew, that's most of the fine points of Hebrew grammar he's already covered here. In other words, in Greek, we're going to go ahead and go into Dana and Matthew and do some other things. But Landon is so thorough on some of these things, and he covers some details that you don't find in any other books. But that's kind of what we're doing now. The Hifil and so forth, once we get through with that, that's in most of the books, almost all the basic books. But then these other points on clause relationships and so forth, that's stuff that's usually not found in the basic grammar. So we're kind of doing several things at one time with Landon, and it makes a nice book that way. Plus his exercises each time, getting the reading and so forth. So we'll see. I would like to finish by the end of the semester, though. It'd be kind of a nice
touch. The procedure will be, I turned in that to Jack
right.
This morning. I didn't hand it to the person because he wasn't there.
Okay.
Is the normal procedure that he'll look it over and then send it on to Don, or what?
Yeah, I think that's usually what happens. He looks over, sends it on to Don, and then they'll give you, and then Don will probably get it back to Jack, and he'll give you a yay or a nay, you know, as far as to pursue it. And then from then you, I don't think you have to turn in an outline. I think you only have rough draft and final draft.
I did,
so. Oh, okay. Good. It's good to have the outline anyway. And so then you can start working on it and get your rough draft, and then next thing will be turning your rough draft into Jack, and then
your final. After approval, that rough draft is.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a quantum leap there.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah, actually, on mine. Do it on the computer. Rough draft is so close to
right.
Final that
that's nice.
That's the nice. Only reason I would, you know, see on all those papers that I write, my rough draft is my final, because I go through and edit on screen.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. That's fine if your rough draft is your final. I don't think there will be any problem. Although you turn it in, then they may make some suggestions for changes and so forth, and then you can with a computer, it's so nice.
Yes, it is. I think I'm going to get a daisy wheel printer to do the final draft on, because it comes out. It was
come out.
I think it's just a photograph or whatever. I think.
Excellent. Yeah, it'd be a perfect form for the printing. It's really nice the equipment we're getting available nowadays.